Hi, Paul Friedrich.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Okay, we're just waiting for the recording to...
Excuse me, the recordings have started. Thank you.
Great. So if I could have Glenn or Gisela, if she's on the phone, whoever's on the phone, do a roll call.
Pleasure, Jeff. It's Glenn.
Okay.
Good morning. Good afternoon, everybody. On the call, we have Jeff Newman, Alex Gakuru, James Bladel, Alan Greenberg, Tatiana Kramaskowski, Paul Diaz, David Maher, and Wolf-Ulrich Knoben. And for staff, we have Marika Koenigs, Liz Gaster, and Glenn de Saint-Jury. Have I missed anybody? Thank you, Jeff. Over to you.
Okay, thank you. Welcome, everyone. It's December 3rd, 2009. This is a call of the PDP work team. I'm going to first issue an apology. I'm calling from a hotel, so I got dropped once before. So if I get dropped, then I apologize. I'll dial right back in, and Marika could take over for the minute or two that I get dropped. So just let me know if you can't hear me. Just send me a note or speak up, and I'll try to get to a better area. With that said, we have a few things on the agenda. In the last couple of weeks, there have been some notes about the face-to-face, post-face-to-face meeting and discussion on the council list, and you probably have all seen by now a request that has been drafted by Marika, a formal request for us to review and send to the PPSC first and then to the council for this face-to-face meeting. And so I want to go through that. There's a proposed timeline of finishing our work that was also sent around. And then we can go through the draft for stages one and two if people have questions on those. And then go back to our regularly scheduled work on stage four, which is the voting and implementation. So are there any questions on the agenda?
No, it's Wolf speaking, Jeff. So. Well, I have to apologize. I have only just 50 minutes from now, so I have time to leave in between. So I would like, I understand that you are going to start with your request for the face-to-face meeting. That would be okay, so that I could cover that at least.
Okay, I don't know if everyone else got that on my phone. That was kind of came in and out. Is it just me?
It's Alan. It wasn't clear, but I could hear him.
Pardon me? Didn't you hear me?
I Alan did.
Okay. I can hear Alan clearly. I don't know. It's probably my phone. I'm sorry. So you said you have about 15 minutes?
No, 50. So it's just roughly 1 hour. So.
Okay. All right. Well, so why don't we get then right to the face-to-face meeting request, because I think that was kind of the most talked about on the list. And Marika sent that out, I want to say November 30th. At least that's the date of the document. It's up on Adobe right now. Did anyone have any comments or questions on that? I see Marika's got her hand raised.
Yeah, this is Marika. I sent another note to the PDP work team mailing list earlier this morning, European time, of a response from Denise Michel to the email that Stefan van Gelder sent on behalf of the registrar stakeholder group to the council list, in which he basically explained that, you know, as the process currently is, as there's no, you know, proper process for the council to approve or disapprove these kind of meetings, that this is not a PDP working group as such. It's not linked to a GNSO PDP process. It's actually a board-instructed work activity. That at this point in time, if I understand their email correctly, that, yes, of course, the council should be consulted and it can have an input in you know, the work team is proposing, but that is basically a decision from the PDP work team and in consultation with staff, who's ultimately responsible for signing off the budget and the travel allocation for such a meeting. So that to place that in context, that yes, we have a request on the table, but I think in the context of that email, it would be more a sharing with the council of what the PDP work team is planning, and as well with the PPEC, if people feel that's appropriate in this regard, and to see if there's any input into how the PDP work team is structuring the meeting or any feedback like that. So I just wanted to put that in context with the request that's up there now.
Okay, so let me go to Paul and then James.
Thanks, Jeff. Marika, and please pass on to Denise, did see the note. Definitely have problems with the note from Denise in that, what she's saying is unfortunately, in a lot of ICANN speak and double speak. I'm sorry to not call this group that is looking at the PDP process a PDP working group. Yeah, technically may be right, but come on already. To make the argument that this is an exceptional group that falls outside the process, technically doesn't need the council's approval to do certain actions, but we're going to go to council because it's the right thing to do. It just smacks of one of these, here we go again, where staff is noodling the language to such an nth degree that it leaves everybody kind of looking and going, say what? Anyway, the point, it's been pretty clear. The registrars have made very clear where we stand on this idea of a face-to-face. So I'm not going to belabor the point, but at least for our efforts this morning and moving forward, I want to echo what Wolf has already posted on the list. This request absolutely must have a more clear description of what the agenda is going to look like. For the potential face-to-face, it's got to be included in this document, not as an attachment. I think we better have a punch list for the face-to-face meetings so that we can very clearly show we either achieved what we set out for or we came up short. As we've noted as registrars, this request is, no matter how staff may want to dress it up, is going to have a high precedent value. There are so many different, I think half a dozen other PDP work groups underway, all of which are behind their original schedules. I mean, if they see this, they're going to expect, if this goes forward, I think that the bar needs to be set very high in terms of, why it's being requested, what exactly we expect to get out of it, and be very clear, very detailed in the request paper itself to, make it clear to the council that, we're doing this and you've laid out why very nicely, but, what we expect to get out of it, and then some more sense of the process, both in terms of what the agenda will look like, what our goals are, and basically the list that we will hold ourselves accountable to. And then finally, I think we better start thinking about the thing that has sparked some debate on the list about who goes, who gets funded for this, because, that's going to be another thing. Obviously, more people who get funded start driving the costs up very quickly, especially depending how far they have to fly in from. And, the whole question about participation or, doubts that a certain member has posted to the list, if folks aren't on these calls in any way, shape, or form consistently, is it really appropriate to now be funding them to fly in? I just personally have a very, very hard time reconciling that statement. I don't know if necessarily this group, certainly not staff, should be determining who goes. But, I think the group should have some recommendations or some language to the council, at least, to say, look, if you're going back to your constituent group or stakeholder group, in identifying who the individual, maybe individuals, are going to be, here are some rough criteria, and it can't simply be some group calling out, we want our own seat at the table because, we are a part of the process. If they've not been participating, they haven't really been part of the process. So, again, for the precedent value, I think we have to make this all very, very clear to folks up front.
Can I just respond, Jeff, to some of the, or ask some questions to Paul, actually, to some of the points he made?
Yeah, sure. Why don't you do that? Then I want to go to James.
Okay. Because Paul, one question I would have for you, because we did include a very detailed timeline, so you know, we don't have to give an answer now, and it would probably be helpful as well to shout out on the mailing list, like what kind of further details would you like to see on, you know, what will be the focus of the meeting? Because I was hoping that the timeline would very clearly set out the pace of where we want to be at the time of the face-to-face meeting and what the objective would be to, you know, bring everything together. So there, I would really appreciate input from you and as well others on the call. And then to some of the points you made on, you know, who should go and how should funding be decided. That's, I think, why, you know, one of the criteria, and we've discussed this as well in the work team, is that, you know, again, this is not, you know, a PDP. It's not about, you know, constituency or stakeholder group positions or, you know, setting out where they stand. This is really about bringing this work to closure. And, you know, I think that's why we've advocated as well that, you know, those that are in attendance should be either, you know, members that have been active in this process and have followed discussions, have attended the meetings, or have specific expert knowledge or expertise of the PDP process. Because, after all, I think this is really about bringing the pieces of the puzzles together, and it's not about, you know, starting up a whole new discussion or a clean slate. So I think, you know, that's from our perspective. So that's just the point I wanted to raise.
Okay.
Shall
thanks.
I respond, Jeff, or do you want to go to someone else?
Quick response.
I can be within a minute, literally. Marika, I appreciate that you've developed a long timeline. And, okay, this is the problem. The draft that I saw did not include the proposed approach. So my bad. I'm glad to see that what you now have up in Adobe is not what I saw in the first draft that had gone out. So, okay, all I want to do is make very, very clear for the counselors they have all the information at their fingertips and not have to look to an appendix or whatnot. I think, and since I'm looking at it the first time, I would just suggest that I think for the group, we have to have a section that says basically what our agenda for the face-to-face will be, so that we do have what I've colloquially called a punch-out list. You know, the key things that we claim we're going to address and hopefully settle in draft form at that meeting. Again, just so it's very clear to everybody. The other thing, as far as, you know, representation and whatnot. Look, I totally agree with you, Marika. I think it should be the people who have been involved. I have a hard time when we do and or. It seems we're stressing the or, that other participants who have something to add may come in, because quite honestly, they may be excellent ideas, but if they've not been part of this group, not been actively participating, it's a huge assumption to think that they're going to listen to all the MP3s, and I think we're going to spend far too much time at a face-to-face going over old history. Bringing individuals like that up to speed with the group, would much prefer that the weight is focused on people who have been participating, and if there's extra things, okay, so be it, but the preference should strongly be towards those who have been part of the process all along.
I'd like to contribute something, Alex, yeah?
Okay, let me go to James, Wolf, Alan, and then I'll come back to you.
Okay.
Yeah, so let me go to James.
Yeah, Jeff, just for the sake of time, I want to reiterate most, if not all, of Paul's earlier points. The technical differences between this group and the PDP working group, I think, will be lost to future working groups who will look to this as a model. For future work, I think that there is some veracity to the point that face-to-face meetings tend to emphasize one geographic region over another, whether that's U.S. or Europe or wherever the face-to-face happens to be. And I feel very strongly that if ICANN is sponsoring an attendee to participate in a face-to-face meeting, and that is that attendee's first exposure to this subject, I feel very strongly that those are dollars misspent and could have been allocated somewhere else. So the participation part is very important to me as well, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, thanks, James. Wolf?
Yes. I think we have to talk about two things. The one is, which I realized from this discussion and from the email exchanges, okay, are those face-to-face meetings justified, and what are the reasons, and what is the justification for? That's the one thing. And the other thing is does the council have to deal with it and has to approve it? So that's what I understand. And this came to my mind from that discussion. But when it came up first time, then I understood that you said, okay, if the council likes to discuss that and likes to put his opinion on it, let's do it. Let's go that procedure. And today also I understood from the Mises email that's what my understanding was, that from their perspective, from her perspective, there is no need for council approval in this case. So these are the different things we have to discuss. So my position was very clear. So I think on the other hand, we have really the need to have a face to face meeting because we are on a stage, let me say, where we have to put things together and not only pieces, but we have to look to the overall process, and this needs more time in, let me say, in one chain, not only 1 hour per 2 weeks. That's one thing. So I would like, I'm really supporting this idea to have a face-to-face meeting. On the other hand, so I was also supporting, okay, if that is the case, then let's bring it up to the council, for my understanding, it was already on the council level, not formally, but the discussion was going on because the registrar started to argue against it and to put emails on this discussion. So for me, the only question: how can we hurry up to bring it up then through that pipeline, PPSC and to the council? In this case, we need also a more comprehensive picture. That's what I was also asking for. If we bring it up to the council, there will be the question, okay, what is it about? Are there other requests for, and how many, and what is behind them, and what is, let me say, a rough picture, a rough figure in the economic, from the economic point of view? So these questions, I think that they could be answered, and the information must be available, I think, so from staff side, to do that. So that's my comment.
Okay, and I think, the hope or the plan was to get this document in final form, this request, send it up to the PPESC quickly, and then hopefully get it to the council before their...
Sorry for the interruption. Brian Wintersout now joins.
Thank you. So the hope, and then get it to the council before their December 17th meeting. I think that's the next one. So that's the goal, is to get this document to them so that if the council does want to discuss it, they have it in front of them for their next call, which is in 2 weeks. So let me go to Alan.
Yeah, I'm in the curious position of supporting almost everything that Paul said and strenuously objecting to the others. I definitely support the concept of doing detailed planning and knowing what we're going to get out of this kind of meeting. I strongly support that the people involved should be those who have partaken in the discussion, and we don't start a ground zero or a base zero discussion on many of these points. I disagree with the tone. I disagree with the issue that this is a precedent for other PDPs. But that notwithstanding, I'm not sure it shouldn't be a precedent. Face-to-face meetings, if done right, can be incredibly productive and allow you to move forward far more than the equivalent of the two or three meetings it replaces in terms of hours for meetings. And I think, in fact, this should be something that ICANN is looking at appropriate times and not being afraid of it. Yes, there's a high cost to it, but I think if we're serious about the issues that we're working on and if they're important, then it's something we need to have in our portfolio of tools.
Okay, and let me go to Alex.
right. Thank you very much. Obviously, from those who have seen my expression of interest, they will probably know I'm new. Post-sale is when I joined the process. Now, I do have a bit of a concern, and when this is said, why shouldn't it be a precedent? First of all, I support the face-to-face meeting, as I said earlier. Now, if we have this as a precedent, and then we also have acknowledged how productive they actually turned out to be, and the output, the implications that you'll have in terms of the overall running of policy at ICANN thereafter, then I ask the question, when we create a condition of active participation, this opens a can of worms, because even people who have participated have not participated to the same level. So even the ones that have been active, the definition of active will be a bit troublesome. And again, in the context of being open and more participatory, from people like me in Africa, I think who have been had a history of underrepresentation literally everywhere, we do feel that then if the precedent is adopted, and then it means automatically we are going to be blocked because we have not participated in other events. So I want to urge people to, the other members, consider that, that you know, we don't want to create a precedent that locks out participants from others, other regions, simply on the basis that they have not participated in the past, and most of the implications it would have in the future of any such face-to-face meeting held. Now, with regard to participation, some of us are studying and reading through the documents, the processes that are there, so that we can make very informed contribution. So we may not be saying so much online, but we are also reading so that we can make sure we contribute to the best of our ability within that timeline. So I would urge understanding from other members that there is no any two people or even the ones that will finally attend that will have made equal contribution. That is really not practical, but we do know that there should be other considerations that should come at play as we figure out what is going to come out. Obviously, from where I stand from, the funding bit is extremely important because, unlike other stakeholder groups, we are fundamentally public interest. So we do not have either commercial support to back our participation. We do not have what government may have in the form of taxes and other stakeholder groups. So we are disadvantaged in the sense of participation, which plays itself in many other activities in ICANN, because we cannot fund ourselves to participate, all our representatives. So I just urge that we just don't make a precedent that is actually basically reinforcing and rubber-stamping exclusion of certain groups. Let me stop there for now, but I do support the face-to-face meeting. And the early it concluded, because some of us would also have to apply for visas, if at all it's decided we participate, that we don't run out of time. Thank you, Jeff.
Okay, and just for our knowledge, how far in advance do you need to apply for a visa?
The best of my knowledge is about 21 days, and I was worried about the holidays in between, Christmas and New Year. So if it's decided it will take place on 17th of January, obviously that's 21, it will be less than 21 days. So if the earlier it's decided, if at all it will be decided that I participate, like my chair, Robin Gross, has recommended, then I think the earlier it's decided, the better. But when I hear the council has not decided about it and it might delay, then it might as well be decided in January, but I would actually say early enough, and I don't think I'll make it because the U.S. Embassy is rather strict, unless maybe, I don't know anything else. I've not applied to the visa yet, only I tried to inquire information. So sorry, I don't have specific information. That's all I could say. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, thank you, Alex. Marika, do you want to respond?
Yes, I would like to respond because I think there seems to be the confusion that participation equals attending a face-to-face meeting. I just want to really emphasize that this face-to-face meeting is not where everything is going to be decided and that's the decision point, and you know, that after that nothing will be able to be changed or said or done. Just want to make clear that if there's a face-to-face meeting, there will be remote participation, so anyone who is interested can dial in, can share their views, and can participate. And also, the idea is that after this meeting, anything that's discussed there and agreed upon is drafted into a document that everyone of the work team, also those that weren't able to participate remotely or weren't able to attend, can provide their input. And, you know, we've had, there have been in the whole, you know, just want to highlight again, from the start of the PDP work team to where we are now, I think we've tried to do our best to encourage participation through, you know, having meetings at ICANN meetings, doing surveys, getting out documents for comments, you know, getting questions on the mailing list. So I just want to emphasize that, you know, this face-to-face meeting, is that's not participation per se. Participation in a working group is much broader than just attending this face-to-face meeting. And just to make sure that everyone understands as well that there will be opportunities to provide input after the face-to-face meeting, because there definitely won't be, you know, the report won't be final. Because we want everyone to give everyone an opportunity, ideally as well, to take that back to their constituencies or stakeholder groups to see if there are any big issues that they identify, to make sure that that input is received as well and hopefully can be fed in until it, before it goes up to the PPSC.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Now, let me go to the specific document, because I want to – it sounds like there's general support for the face-to-face and for sending this document to the PPSC and then to the council. I want to drill down on – it seems like most of the discussion is focused on the who at this point and a little bit of discussion on when. But on the section of who, I've heard a couple people, including Marika and Paul, talk about active members. Do you guys want to just go into a little bit more about what you mean by active? Because I know that question is going to come up from the PPSC and the council. So to the extent we can incorporate that into the document, that might help to at least answer those questions beforehand. So let me go to Paul, who's got his hands up.
Thanks, Jeff. Look, I think even more fundamental than active is the request right now envisions one rep per stakeholder group for contracted, and then one rep per constituency on the non-contracted House. And there's been some debate on the list on whether that was appropriate or not. I think maybe we ought to start there before we even get to who and what, so we have a rough idea of how many bodies we're talking about. And the one thing that I don't see in here with the who, what, why, when, where, how, is the how much. Because, you know, that could be, I'm sure that's going to be a very, very important factor for everybody to consider. It's if you, how many folks is, you know, the more you invite, of course, or the more you fund, the greater the cost. So answering the question first, are we going to stick with what was originally proposed? Basically one person, one rep per constituency group, and then, of course, ALAC. Or are we going to, you know, perhaps expand that in some way and then think about what that's going to mean in terms of the budgetary request, which ultimately has to be a part of this draft document.
Right. So let me. So the request on the table is, or the proposal on the table is for one, for each, for the contracted. One per each constituency. Right. So it's one registry, one registrar, one ISP, one. IPC, one VC, and one non-commercial, along with the one ALAC and the chair. Is there? What do you personally think of that proposal? And is that? Do you have any amendments to that part of it?
Me, Jeff, I think that's a great starting point. Personally, I disagree with the comments made by Robin on the list. You know, come on already. Let's stop this bickering between non-commercial interests and commercial interests and worrying so much about, you know, equal slices of the pie. As Marika's already said, this is a face-to-face to try and get as much work done as possible. It won't be the end-all, be-all of this particular effort. Everybody's still going to have a chance to weigh in. So I think the proposal on the table is acceptable, and that's what we should be focused on.
Okay. James?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. This is James, and I just had a couple of questions or points to that end, and I think that, you know, one of them would be, do we want to, you know, saying that we're going to have one registrar is probably different if that registrar is coming from Northern Virginia like Paul or coming from the hinterland like myself, and that's a very different, or if we were to, you know, let's say, fly someone out from Australia. So I think that it's not enough to say headcount and where they're coming from as far as where they come from in the community. We also probably need to have a rough idea of where folks are coming from geographically. Secondly, I'm just and I was just thinking about this a little bit earlier today, is this discussion of costs. Presenting a cost structure to the council is important, because I think they need to see, have some visibility into the impact of this face-to-face meeting. But it does open the question, if you recall the conversation between Mike Rodenbaugh and myself about whether or not council has a budget and how they make those types of decisions. And I'm not sure how, putting myself in the place of an individual counselor, how they would be able to tell that something was appropriately costed or not, without a budget to push off from or any or to provide any context. And then finally, I wanted to offer an idea on what constitutes active participation. I think that this group has been going on now since May, April, and we've been meeting every other week. We've had two face-to-face meetings in Sydney and in Seoul, and I think that a very easy threshold would say 50% attendance on the calls for all the teleconferences we've had. Participation in the general meetings, whether that's physical or remote, and then some level or threshold of responsiveness to Marika's surveys that we've been working on throughout this process. So those are my 3 points there, and I'll just drop back on the mute.
Okay. Thanks, James. And actually, Marika, it may help. I know a couple months ago we actually submitted or compiled the information about attendance on the calls. Maybe if we can do that again in the next couple days to submit, to update that, and to also do a list like James just suggested of people who have responded to the surveys, that might help us compile information.
I'll do so.
Okay, and Marika, you had a comment as well.
I think Alan was ahead of me.
Okay, so I'll go to Alan and then Marika.
Okay. First of all, in the interest of full disclosure, I'll say my first GNSO meeting was a face-to-face meeting outside of an ICANN meeting, because I had just taken over the role. And I think that's one of the things we need to consider when we talk about active participants. That is, there are always going to be exceptional circumstances. That is, the active participant leaves their job or dies or whatever, and someone else has to drop in. And that's a special situation I think we have to factor in. But if we're in a steady state mode, I think active participation in this kind of process is important, so we don't have to do complete level sets with a large number of people. I disagree with Alex, or I'm sorry, maybe it wasn't Alex, disagree with somebody who said we have to look at where people are coming from. I think that's something ICANN has not done and we should not do. I think we need to look at who is coming and then decide where the location is. ICANN tends to use average amounts for people around the world, and we don't want to disadvantage someone because it's an expensive trip. I think it's ICANN's job to figure out where it should be that we maximize the use of travel funds. I think that's what it
is. Al, this is James, and I just wanted to respond to that. I was talking about location in terms of coming up with a budget, not determining attendance or who's eligible.
I understand, but ICANN tends to use flat amounts to travel to move someone, and it either averages out or it's their job to come up with the right average. I wouldn't want to use where people come from as the determining factor to do it or not.
But you agree they'd be different costings?
They may well be, and that's something that, I mean, that's one of the reasons that currently for travel to ICANN meetings, ICANN allocates a certain number of headcount and not the dollars, because that way, yes, sometimes they come out ahead, sometimes they come out behind based on where people travel from, but it doesn't disadvantage the individual participants because of it.
Well, let me go over to Marika, because I think that's the point she was going to address. Right, Marika?
Yes, because, of course, we already, we asked some time ago, like, who would normally be the representatives that, would be requesting funding. And on the basis of that, we mapped that. And it looks like... hello?
You're still there. You just had
a background. Yeah, I'm not sure
where that... Yeah, I think someone put us on hold, probably. Well, if you can follow me. And on the basis of that, it looks like most participants that are requesting funding would be based in the U.S., and several of those are even based in Washington, D.C. So based on that, we'll look further into this, but it looks very likely that that is the most cost-efficient location at this point in time. And we definitely do take that into account, looking at where people come from and trying to see if there's indeed an obvious location that jumps out at somewhere, you know, in the middle ground that we, you know, have organized meetings before and know it's, you know, manageable and have good meeting facilities. So I think that's what we're currently looking at.
Okay. Paul or Marika, did you have any other comments, or is that the main one?
No, that was the main one because people were making the question as to, you know, location of participants and how that will be factored in. So one other comment I did want to make, and that, you know, comes back as well to James' point. I know some people have suggested that, you know, we should add a budget to it, but, you know, like James said, I don't really know what the council can do with that without, you know, matching that to the overall budget they have, which is currently not the situation they operate in. So, you know, of course, it's in our interest as well to, you know, make this the most cost-efficient possible. And, you know, based on the experience we have had with ICANN meetings, you know, we have a travel department that looks at these things and makes travel arrangements. So, you know, of course, we're trying to, you know, do everything to make the cost reasonable and get a good package. So I think that's just something you'll have to trust us on. I don't know how much a number would help the council to make a decision or not if that's not placed into context of an overall budget or how much other face-to-face meetings might have cost or would cost. So.
Okay, Paul?
Jeff, I just want to ask, I don't recall, when did you guys solicit who might attend and whatnot? And that you said you've come up with a list and most of the people who had responded were North America-based? I only asked, I mean, if it was done, so be it. I only asked, I didn't remember that, and I know that there have been, when we raised this within the within our stakeholder group, that non-North America-based people were, you know, very concerned that this is potentially taking ICANN a major step back. In that, in the past, you know, policy development work, policy work in general was dominated by North American interests, and ICANN seems to have, you know, made strides over the years to be more inclusive and more international. And again, if I missed that particular call of interest, okay, you know, my bad. But at the same time, I think then in the proposal, that we ought to provide at least that data so that people, again, counselors will have some idea of who it is that we're talking about funding and sponsoring.
Yeah, I think, I'll let Marika address.
Alex,
I'm sorry, who is that?
Alex.
Okay, I'll make a quick point and then I'll go to Alex. I think, Paul, I hear what you're saying on taking a step back, but if you look at the composition of the group, which is not, it's basically self-selected, right? It wasn't that ICANN staff or even the constituents. It's not like they said, we want people from North America. I think if you look at the composition of the group, that's kind of just the way it turned out to be. I think if it turned out to be that most were European-based, then, you know, obviously then Europe would be the most cost-efficient. I think this is a self-selected group, and we are where we are. Nothing we could do about that, but I don't think it was a conscious decision to make this North American-based. It was looking at who attends the calls, who responded to the survey on dates that they were available, and just generally who responds on the mailing list. It seems like a lot of people are North American-based, and in fact, a lot of people are around the Washington, D.C. area, and so I think that's where it really came from. Let me go to Alex.
Yes, thanks, Jeff. I think we make this a precedent as it's suggested, and then we already have all this North America, again, they are Washington, D.C. I want to echo his point, and the criteria of active participation is now being used retrospectively. It was not something that was there before, so I don't know. I tend to feel that I think it's a step backwards, because I think post-sale, I think ICANN was opening up to more participation. I personally, from my point of view and my constituency, I tend to feel like this is not really, it's not taking forward gains we made at Korea. And so we are now taking it there, and it does appear that incidentally with that criteria now being made applicable, then obviously I do not think that there's any time soon I'll be able to catch up with the participation that has been made by other people on the list. I may as well say I think I'll never participate in any other face-to-face meeting in lieu of the historical non-participation to the levels of the North America DC-based individuals at this point in time on this group. So I think there should be a deliberate effort to make this more global one way or the other, and I think we can make those proposals to be more inclusive and then not... ICANN is already funding physical attendance of the fellows. So I think this progress that was being made, we need to also make sure on this meeting, also this deliberate outreach to get other people involved. Thanks.
Okay, Marika, do you want to address that?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to actually confirm what you said, that, you know, while we came to Washington, not to say, oh, let's do it in North America, and, you know, but really looking at the participants and the most cost-efficient destination. And as well, to Alex's point, I mean, this is not about the fellowship or our funding for participation. This is really to come to closure on the specific project that this group is looking at. And I said there are many other ways to participate. Participation is not only attending a face-to-face meeting. So that's the reason why, you know, Washington, D.C. looks like the most cost-efficient solution based on the composition of the group and those that have been active participants in the meeting.
Okay, let me go back to, I can't remember, sorry, if it was Paul or it was James. I think it was Paul that said that the sentence in here that talks about the and or have specific expertise and knowledge, Paul had said that there was probably too much of an emphasis on the or part of it. And I see Alan's hands raised, but let me address the question to Paul, and then I'll come back to Alan. So, Paul, what would your recommendation be on that clause, and how would you – so if you took out the or, it would just say receive provided that those to receive funding have been active members of the PDP work team, and then we get into an issue of active membership, and then we get into Alex's issue, which is, you know, at some point people need to be replaced, and, you know, now Alex is committed to doing this, and he may not fit the active definition. So, Paul, how would you revise that?
I think you might have misunderstood me, Jeff. I advocate for emphasizing the and, not the or. In other words, I didn't think that there's a natural bias. I just felt that the people who have been participating on the calls, contributing to the surveys, worked with the constituency to get in initial statements, that those are the folks that are you know, pushed up to the front of the line to represent their group and get funding. If there are unique individuals who really have something special to bring who have not been actively participating in the various levels, maybe, okay, but I just didn't want to have the or included in there and sort of creating an opportunity for somebody to, for lack of a better term, go on a junket.
Oh, I got you. Yeah. Okay, I misunderstood initially, but so you would just take out the or and just have it and have special expertise and knowledge of the PDP that will help to make the face-to-face meeting as effective as possible. Okay, Alan?
Yeah, two quick points. I think it's important for people to recognize that the most cost-effective place does not mean everyone's going to be cheap to get there. There are going to be some incredibly expensive ones, which balance the ones who will be free or a couple of $100 or something like that. So just because it's in one place does not prejudice it against the people who are very far away. The visas are, of course, an issue we have to factor in. And I tend to agree with the previous comment that continuity is important. There will be exceptions. After any annual general meeting, there's going to be a perhaps large change of players in some stakeholder groups and constituencies, and people who may have been active will not be active in the coming year. And I think we have to be flexible and factor in that kind of thing.
Okay. So, again, I think I'm not seeing any other hands raised.
I really want to get this document finalized as quickly as possible so we can get it to the PPSC and then to the council. It's unclear, as we've discussed, what the exact role of the council is. I mean, staff has made its position known. I'm sure the council is going to have its own opinion on this. Our job, I think, is to just get the rationale out there and let the council do whatever it's going to do. I think that's kind of outside our scope and purview, but we should move forward with our work and move forward with assuming that there will be a face-to-face, and unless someone tells us otherwise, that's kind of the approach I've been taking. Does anyone disagree with that?
Jeff, it's Wolf speaking. Just to the procedure, so what does it mean, in terms of time? So, the council is meeting on 17th of December, going to meet. That normally he expects input to be sent to it some days in advance. Yeah. How does it fit to your plan regarding the PPSC?
Well, I'd like to get the document out to the PPSC by tomorrow to give them, 5-6 days to think about it and let us know if there's any objections, and then get it to the council by no later than the 10th so that they have a week to look at it before they have their meeting. That's the goal. That's what I'd like to happen.
Okay. So just let me... does it mean you would like to send it the document as it is, or do you like to add something which with regards to potential other requests? So because that would be needed, I would see that, because this would be the first question on council level. Is there any others requests, and what does it mean, so compared with what we are doing? So
I'm sorry, what do you mean other requests?
Other requests for face-to-face meetings from other groups.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of, and I'll let Marika address as well, I think that's outside of our purview. I mean, that all we can do is submit a request from the work team and ultimately from the PPSC to the staff and to council and put, the council on notice. It's for the council to look at those other issues. There's nothing that we really can do as an individual work team on that. We'll let them discuss it and come to some conclusion if they do. But again, I think our, from the PDP work team's perspective, is really just to make our case known and heard for this face-to-face, and then, push it on and assume that unless there's any objection, we're going to plan on the 18th and 19th of January. So, Marika, do you want to address?
Yeah, this is Marika. No, just to note as well, on other meetings, there are no other requests, as I'm currently aware of. I know that the SCI team briefly discussed it, but I don't think it's still on the cards, and they have a very short deadline to deliver their work. To point out on the practical side, while we go forward with the PPSC and sending the request to the council, I think at the same time staff will go ahead as well in making the practical arrangements, or at least inquiring and trying to get a sense of where the meeting can be held and what facilities are available to make sure as well, because if we want to make this a cost efficient meeting, it won't work if 1 week before the meeting we book the hotel or book the meeting room. So I think from that perspective, we'll try to already move that forward and get some clarity as well on how we can manage the travel arrangements and things like that. So,
May I ask the last question on this, and I'll not belabor it?
Sure.
Alex? Yes, in lieu of the discussions and the criteria and things we have discussed, would I be right to assume that I should exclude, I should not consider myself part of this for my logistical purposes, for planning purposes? I think it's good to have that clear, so I can know what I'm doing in January for the planning, please.
Well, does anyone have it's a tough question. So, well, James, are you raising your hand for this question or?
No, something previous.
Okay.
You know, I'll give my personal view, and I'll let others jump in if they disagree. My personal view is you are now a member of the team. You know, and I'm, you know, one of the things that we've had lacking is participation from the non-commercials. So my view, and again, it's personal, is that you should be invited. I mean, I'd like to see active participation from you on the list and to the documents. But I'll let others weigh in on that.
Thank you.
Does anyone else want to, Alan, do you want to address this?
Yeah, I'll address that quickly. I mean, at this point, the proposal says one from the and essentially NCUC, the only constituency in the non-commercial stakeholders group as of today. And to some extent, if Alex gets the go-ahead from them saying he's their lead rep and he's someone who has given an intent to keep on participating in this group, I think he's a reasonable candidate to be, you know, to plan to be there. If NCUC and NCSG says no, 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 somebody else is our preferred one, then there's an issue. You know, but I think that's a decision to some extent has to be made at that level before we can do it. I raised my hand for another question. We say we're going to go to the PPSC. I presume that's going to be a, if there's no objection, because there's no opportunity for a formal meeting of that group, one might want to look at the mailing list for that group, because it should have changed with the changeover in the council, and on the wiki anyway, it hasn't.
Okay, I think that's a good point. And that, yes, that was my intent, was to basically do it by objection, you know, if anyone objects. But so that was my intent. Marika, did you want to address this specific point, and then I'll go to James?
Yes, I wanted to address, because we have been discussing now before, the issue of we need to send out a list of participation, who have responded to surveys, consider whether we should have you know, a minimum number of meetings that people have attended in order to get funded. And on the other hand, now we turn around saying, you know, any stakeholder group or constituency can decide who they would like to send. And I have a concern there because, of course, that opens as well the doors for others. So, and you know, this is nothing personal against Alex, and I really hope that he will contribute and participate. But, you know, I still believe that a face-to-face meeting would really benefit from someone that has been involved from the start in this discussion, as these are highly complex issues that we spend many hours going over. And this is, you know, trying to bring the pieces of the puzzle together. So I think from a staff's perspective, we really want to, you know, make sure that we fund those that can make that happen and contribute to the process. So I just want to try to bring those two pieces of the discussion together, where we on the one hand say, well, you know, funding should be reserved for active participants. And we have had other members from the NCUC participating, or at least in the mailing list, like people like Avery and Robin herself, that are familiar with the PDP and have been members of this work team since an earlier stage. So so I just want to, you know, put that into the mix.
Okay, but I just, to Alan's point, though, I think the key thing for me is not just past active participation, but is a future commitment to continue to participate. So to just have Robin come in just because she knows the process and then come to face-to-face but then drop off, I don't think is really beneficial for us. So I think the commitment, I mean, if the non-commercials are saying that Alex is the one, he's the one that's with us until the end, I think that you know, I think at some point the non-commercials need to make that decision. And we could certainly have Avery and Robin participate remotely as well. James, you want to? I know you had another point, so you want to bring it up, and then,
yeah. So just very quickly, a point or a comment towards timing. If council's meeting here in looks like 2 weeks, and with this has to go to the PPSC first for either approval or non-objection, it seems to me that would have to happen, and council would have to review and approve this request in a single session in order to make that January date. Otherwise, we're looking at February. Is that correct?
Yeah,
am I missing something?
it definitely needs to go to the council by this meeting, and they need to object at this meeting. Otherwise, it will happen. I mean, on the 18th and 19th, unless. Yeah. Again, I think our point is let's move forward with the assumption it's going to happen in January. If the council comes down and says no and tries to put a stop to that, then we'll look at future dates and figure that out. But
or simply defers.
What's that?
Defers saying no. Deferring the decision to a future meeting is saying no.
Right. That was my point.
Well, No, I think at this point, because again, it's unclear what jurisdiction the council has to refuse to allow this meeting to go forward.
I understand.
So I think if the and we'll make it clear to the council that unless otherwise heard, we will have this meeting on the 18th and 19th. I think that's the approach we need to take. It seems like, well, James has a comment, Marika has a comment, so let me...
Well, Jim, I questioned. You said it's not up to the council to determine whether this meeting goes forward.
I said there's still a question as to whether this is up to the council, because again, this was
certainly some councillors think it is their decision.
Correct. I'm sure some councillors do. Marika, do you have a comment?
Well, specifically to that, I mean, well, you know, I would just like to refer people to Denise's email on that specific question in which I also read that, you know, indeed, there's currently no procedure and, you know, the council can say no, but if the working wants it and the staff wants it, of course, I don't think it's advisable to maybe go ahead, but there's no official, at this day, point in time, there's no official need to get approval from the council for such a meeting, even though, you know, some might want it or... It's something that might be desirable or maybe something that should be developed. But, you know, if you look at the rules or things like that, there's no need to get formal approval. And one thing I wanted to point out, and I think once we send this request or notice or how we want to call it, I think it's very important as well to point out, saying if there's no face-to-face meeting and, you know, if that's the decision in the end or if the working feels that, you know, we don't want it or there's strong objection in the council and the working says, well, we take that to heart, I think we need to make sure as well that they understand that will set the timeline for delivering a report seriously back. And the overall process, that it still needs to go to the PPAC and the GMSO Council. So I think we need to be clear as well that the reason why we want to the face-to-face meeting why we think it's important is to bring this process to closure as soon as possible. As there's already, you know, we've already been working for over 10 months. So the new GMSO Council has taken its seat in Seoul, but they still don't have a new policy process. And, you know, all the steps that still will need to be gone through with the PPSC and the council, that will still take significant time. So I think it's important to highlight that element. It's not just a face-to-face meeting, to have a face-to-face meeting and see each other and say hi and, you know, get some work done. It's really to try to speed up the process and get to closure.
So I think, though, as a just to be safe, I do think that, Marika, we should try to send out some polls on February just in case the council does send clear instructions not to do this until they've had more time, or we just need to be prepared. So maybe we'll talk offline of how to do that or to get a doodle out to see what other time in February would work for people, just so that... of a backup. But again, I think the assumption is that we're going to go forward with this unless the council as a whole acts to say no to this. Okay, is there any other discussion on this request? I do want to turn to the milestones, because I know Alan had, when he saw it, the first reaction was this is pretty unrealistic. Alan, you want to comment on which parts of it are unrealistic, or is it the whole, taken as a whole?
I'm not sure I remember, to be quite candid. I just found it was very aggressive and didn't allow a lot of slack in any of the stages, which tends to tell me it's going to be difficult. But I looked at it carefully at that point, and I don't remember the. I don't think I did an analysis, but I don't remember quite what I was focusing on. But I just found the whole thing, despite the fact that it's stretched it over a bunch of months, it just seemed rather aggressive to me. But I don't think I can't address it any more specifically.
Okay, I think right. It is, and I'm going to put it to Marika. It is definitely aggressive. It's one we'd like to push for, and we'll revise as necessary. But I think, Marika, let me let you address.
And I support that.
This is Marika, because I remember, Alan, because the point you were making was on the last bit of the timeline, which is, by the way, attached to this document. If people scroll to the end of it, they'll see it, which is basically the public comment period would close on 15th of April, and that would be a week to review and a week to revise the report. And I'm absolutely agree there with you. This is just, you know, hypothetical under the assumption that there are almost no comments, but this is a part that, you know, we can only adjust based on the number of comments received, you know, and being able to assess how much time it will take the working group to review those and incorporate those. So this last part is really just, you know, I just put in some dates to have something there, but I think it's more realistic that once the public comment period closes and we actually see what has come in and, you know, how controversial or how, you know, how difficult these issues are going to be to incorporate those, and I think we can make a more realistic assessment of the real end timeline of the report. And again, you know, indeed, the timeline is very ambitious, and it's actually completely focused on getting an initial report or a final report out so it can be reviewed and discussed at the ICANN meeting in Nairobi. Also take it an advantage, and I think it's something that, you know, we've discussed as part of our discussions on the different issues as well, of taking advantage of having the community there, presenting it, and then opening a public comment period so people are informed about what we're asking public comments about, and maybe already having a discussion as well with the PPSC to socialize the ideas and the concepts, and hopefully they might already provide input. So again, so when it moves into the next stage, to the PPSC level, you know, they won't have to go through the whole process like we did, and, you know, take another year to get it sent to the council. So that's a bit the thinking about it and behind it, and definitely very ambitious, and hopefully we can meet the deadline.
I thank Marika for remembering what I said better than I did. But yes, that last period, given the standard that we're being held to these days on using public comments and both factoring them in and saying why we don't if we don't, that those last couple of weeks I think are far too tight. Yes.
Yeah, we will certainly have to live by the advice that we give in our own report. Right.
Oh. Just to make it more awkward. Well, they're not rules until after we finish, though.
Yeah, true, but we should probably try to live up to them to show that it's realistic. Okay, and on that note, any other questions on the timeline? All right,
not from me, sorry, Alex. Not from me.
Oh, thank you, Alex. So, if you all notice, we did submit, shortly after the last call, we did submit the drafts for stages 1 and 2. 1 had been out there previously. There were no changes to that. We added stage 2. That came out almost immediately after our last call 2 weeks ago. I will note for the record that there have been no comments on that. So I can only implore on you, please, I don't know if people have read it already, and I don't want to take up time during this call to talk if there's any comments, but can you please read that by the next call, or better yet, put some comments on email, because I think we don't have to wait for teleconferences to have discussions on point. So I know everyone's been really busy, but, you know, this is really what we're talking about, is the outcomes of this group. And there are still a number of questions in stages 1 and 2, which we may reserve to discuss until the face-to-face meeting, but we want to make sure we have the issues framed right. So it's really important for you all to read it and to make comments. So please, if you can, I don't know, I can't really beg you to do it, but it would be very helpful for you to review stages 1 and 2. Any questions on that? So we'll and I think we've highlighted some of the questions in the document. It's up on Adobe now, but so you can see, you know, for example, highlight it as far as you'll see in you know, I'm randomly going through it. You'll see it says to be decided, or you know, this is still a question. There are notations in the draft where that happens. You'll see that in recommendations. So, without going through it, is there any other questions on that? Please review that and submit some email comments. And actually, before we go to stage four, I do want to say that the next call is scheduled for December 17th. Our next call, unfortunately, it conflicts with the council meeting, so we will need to send a doodle out for another time on that day to have a call, or another day to have that call. So we'll send that out shortly after this. And in fact, one of the options is if people are available next Thursday, we can do the call then, as opposed to waiting 2 weeks. But I think we should send out the doodle and figure out when people are available. Okay, hearing no comments on that, if we can go and spend the next, you know, 20 minutes or so on stage four, going back to voting and implementation to where we left off, I'll give Marika a second to upload that. And it's coming up. Okay, so everyone should have the document now in front of them on Adobe. We've gone through, well, at least we've discussed the issues under what to do with working groups, what the council can do with the working group report, and whether it can look at individual recommendations or whether it's look at the report as a whole. We've went through that. We've talked about public comments and you know, whether a working group can recommend or should recommend another public comment period when it goes to the council on the final report. We left off at, and Marika, keep me honest here, we left off at number three, which is, you know, what should be in the report to the board? What should the delivery of the report from the council to the board and how that should look? We started to talk about it on the last call. Right now what happens is, and Marika, correct me if I'm wrong, is ICANN staff takes the final report from the council, drafts a board report, which is not made public, and that board report goes to, along with the whole full report, to the board itself. One of my personal pet peeves for a long time now has been that board report is never seen by the public. Nobody knows what's in it. And you know, some of the things that I've heard are that perhaps it should be the council or even the working group that writes the board report as opposed to takes it from the executive summary as opposed to having ICANN policy staff do it themselves. So that's been discussed. Alan, did you have a comment on that?
Yeah, I support what you're saying. I mean, it's unclear. We don't see what staff produces, so we don't know how the report is framed. But I think it goes without saying that the full set of the recommendations that council approves have to be presented to the board, because the board doesn't have the discretion to only implement half of them or something like that. So I think we can have some assurance the whole set of recommendations are included in the staff report, but we have no idea how it's framed or anything else around it.
So when I was thinking about this, and I know ICANN staff may disagree, but I'd like to actually make a formal request from this work team to ICANN staff to ask them for the board reports on the last several issues that have on the last several PDPs that have gone to the board, so that we can see what's in those board reports.
Liz. Can I respond?
Sure.
So there actually are two reports that go to the board along with a recommendation. One is the staff report that is currently confidential, and the other is a report that the council does write, or that the staff writes for the council. And in my mind, it's perfectly acceptable to talk about both in this group and make and for this group to make recommendations about both. But I think at the outset, enhancing the public council report to the board to include information that you think might be currently missing or would add more depth, you know, is perfectly within scope of this group. And the other thing that I think is missing in that process, and it's something I've been thinking about in the context of the communications work team, which is in charge of enhancing communications with the board and with SOs and ACs, is that there ought to be a mechanism for the board and the council to have a dialogue, and potentially the board and the working group, about when a recommendation is forwarded to the board, so that if the board has questions or wants to understand further, you know, why the group did or didn't look at whatever they might have looked at, or, you know, want to understand better, that there be a mechanism for a real dialogue and not just, you know, a one-way communication with no opportunity for the board to ask the council or the working group questions. So I'd like to throw that idea out. But going back to the private board paper, the rationale, of course, behind it is that the staff has, you know, a duty to the board and the organization that is independent from the council. And in terms of the implementation and other issues that staff may want to convey to the board, it's been at least the tradition that from a staff perspective, there needs to be a mechanism where there can be a communication that isn't necessarily public, because we in fact work for ICANN and have a responsibility to be able to convey information to the board that we might think is relevant. So I don't want to close that off. I'm just giving you the position that has been articulated. It's certainly appropriate for this group to voice any concern with that, that it feels is appropriate. But I just want to make clear that there are these two reports, and I do see a lot of opportunity for improvement with regard to the way the board and the council and the work team might communicate following a recommendation made to the board. Thanks.
Okay, and then but Liz, you have a. I do think that I would like this group to make a request to the staff to provide those reports to us. Obviously, taking out any privileged or legal communications, but to see those reports. Obviously, we're kind of shooting in the dark here because we don't know. None of us know what's ever been delivered to the board. We never get to see the board report, so to make recommendations on things we've never seen
just to be clear, I was saying make recommendations on the report to the board that is the council's report to the board, not the staff report to the board. That if you think that report that is sent to the board from the council today should have ingredients in it that are, and those are all public reports. I mean, I wrote one, I believe, on, I need to think of which one I wrote, I think maybe on domain tasting, where we, you know, forward the final vote of the council to the board. And I'm happy to send that because it's public. And others that we've done with consensus, you know, policies that, recommendations that the council has made to the board. But I'm distinguishing that from there is a private report, and it has been requested that staff release those private reports before, and that request has been denied. So.
Okay, Alan, do you have any comments?
Yeah, first of all, I strongly support Liz's suggestion there be an opportunity for dialogue. Right now, we only have dialogue after things blow up royally, and there's probably a better time to have dialogue. In terms of the staff reports, I can certainly imagine a staff report saying to the board, don't implement this policy because if you do, we will be sued, or things like that. And those comments admittedly should be privileged, I am a little bit worried, though, that things could get to that stage and those issues would not have been raised within the working group by staff and by legal counsel, which we've already made the comment that we should have better access to legal counsel. So if indeed there are privileged things that are being said to the board, I would surely hope that the issues have been raised. Now, maybe the working group ignores them and it needs to be said quietly to the board, but I would like to imagine that there is nothing that's in that staff evaluation after the policy is passed by council that could not have been said in a public forum when it was just being discussed. And if that's not the case, I think that needs to be fixed, and we need to fix it in the processes we're building.
Well, and Alan, just to jump on that as well, the problem I have is that I've talked to a number of board members, and a number of board members have said that they basically don't have time to read the full report. They don't even have time to read the public report. So in essence, what they do is, for better or for worse, they read the private reports that they get from the staff.
I
everything else.
Understood.
I have a huge problem with that. And to the extent that I don't have a problem with ICANN staff writing a report that says, if you look at page whatever of the final report of the working group, then we have an issue with that particular recommendation because X, Y, and Z, and we may be sued. The problem I have is that the private report also summarizes, from what I understand, provides yet another summary of the full report. So you have a summary of a summary of a summary that ultimately gets to the board, and to the extent that that private report contains a summary of what is in the ultimate report, that should come only from the working group or the council and should not come from staff. And that's my big – I guess if there's anything I'd like to see changed personally, it would be that staff is no longer in a position to summarize the recommendations. They could provide advice, and we don't need to see that advice. I think that's confidential privilege. But to the extent that there's a summary provided of the recommendations, that should be provided by the working group or the council.
So we need to know how many pages we're allowed to make the board summary, and we need to hold to that, and then staff can provide advice around that.
Correct.
I think that's good wording.
So Liz, would that... Now, again, I haven't seen these private reports say that these private reports summarize the recommendations as well as providing advice.
Yeah.
So would it be a feasible recommendation to say that these private reports do not contain summaries that are written by staff, but rather contain summaries that are written by the working group? And then staff is obviously free to put advice or recommendations around those, but that any summary of the recommendations should be provided by the council or the working group.
I think that if that's the consensus of this group, it should be in this report.
It's likely
okay.
to be the same staff member who's writing that, who helped us write the document. So...
In other words, I can't respond and say, you know, yes, on that basis we'll make everything else public because I don't have that authority. But I can encourage you to note your preference strongly and the rationale for it. But I think the, you know, what you said about the reports being too long is part of the problem. If they read every constituency statement exactly as you've written it, and of course all those links are provided. And the report is provided, but the board can't wade through that. What is the is there a path that this group could recommend to develop a public paper that accompanies a recommendation that boils down into something the board can accept what the viewpoints are in the report and of the group that would negate the need for some or all of what is provided separately by staff and that meets the board concern. I mean, you described it that board members are saying they can't read through everything. That could be a recommendation to get through.
Liz, can you provide us with the norms that are used for such a report in terms of brevity, simple language, and whatever, triple spacing?
Well, and I think to add to that as well, I think, Liz, you raised a good point earlier, which perhaps, look, it's not that often that there's a final report on a PDP process. And perhaps, one of our recommendations is that report, it's not only that report, but one of our recommendations could be that there is a formal presentation by the working group or the council directly to the board on its findings. I think that may go a long way at a public meeting or even on a teleconference, that there's opportunity for the board members to ask questions, not of staff, but of the group itself. So I think those combined may help educate the board that it doesn't necessarily have to read the full report.
I think we're getting some good stuff here.
So at number three, basically, and we'll end, I guess, our call now. Number three, if you look at it, there's currently requirements that must be in the report to the board, the council report to the board. And the question is, are these the right and this is asked also on the survey, which I should remind everyone that there is a survey for Sage 4 that's out there that people can respond to. But there are elements in the bylaws as to what needs to be in the report to the board. I encourage everyone to read these requirements and decide, are these still the right requirements? Should there be additional ones? And B, should this be something that's in the bylaws itself? Should this be something that's a recommendation as opposed to hard-coded in the bylaws? So if you notice, there's things like, there needs to be a clear statement of the vote recommendations. If there's a supermajority, if there's not a supermajority, what's required? Analysis of how the issue would affect each stakeholder group, which I think we've talked about previously, should be in the final report anyway, not just in the board report. And then advice of outside advisors, obviously the final report that's submitted to the council, and a copy of it says a copy of all the minutes of the council deliberation policy. I guess that's probably more just links that are provided. Are those still the right requirements? Should there be additional ones? I think that's a question we need to answer. Any comments on that? I'm not sure we have enough time to actually go into the next one, but I do encourage, before we get off the call, please respond to the Stage 4 survey. Please also look at the Stage 1 and 2 reports that are out there, and Stage 3 reports should be out there by early next week, if you look at the timeline. So you're going to have Stages 1, 2, and 3 to comment on by next week. So I know there's a lot of stuff out there, but we're trying to move as aggressively as we can in conjunction with our timeline. We will submit our justification to the PPSC in the next day and hopefully get to that to the council by the 10th. Is there any other questions on what's going on? Hearing a lot of silence, so I'll take silence as everyone understands and agrees with the path forward.
Jeff, can I ask one question? It's Marika.
Sure.
Do you want me to make changes to the request as it is, as we discussed, or are you going to do that before sending it to the PTC? Do you want to put it out to the mailing list again, or what is the process?
Well, so I think what we heard is that, at least on the WHO section, to change that and to, or to change the and or to an and.
And you want me to include as well the participation data on the attendance and participation in the survey with the request?
Yeah, I would just include that as an appendix just to give the PPSC and the council an idea of who's been coming.
Jeff, I think we also need to add some words, you know, to cover the case where there are significant personnel changes. You know, that past attendance is not the only issue, as you pointed out. We still have 6 months ahead of us. If someone is committing, if we have had little participation from a given group, and someone is committing to work actively for the next N months, I think that's a measure of participation also. So we need to cover that somehow in the words.
Yes, I agree with that. Marika, is that something you can add in there? So the requirements, I think in the WHO section, it's funding for active members of the PDP and have specific expertise with some, you know, at the end of that sentence, maybe provided that the PDP work team understands that there is a normal course of dealing a natural turnover, and that, you know, it's also acceptable, or the work team believes it's acceptable to provide funding to members who are committed to the remainder of the process if they have not previously been active in the group.
Jeff, I still have a concern, because it sort of goes completely against the argument that's made before. Because basically, say you first say it has to be participation and knowledge. And then your second sentence is basically anyone who signs up and says they are committed.
Well, but remember, there's still a limitation on the number of people. So someone's going to have to make hard choices sometimes.
I think if you changed it to provided that those proposed to receive funding have been or are intending to be active members of the PDP work team.
Does it require as well some expertise to make at this point in the process to be? That's a question. I mean, for the group. I mean, is it possible so late in the process to be an active participant and contribute without expert knowledge of the PDP?
Well, it wasn't a requirement to have expertise and knowledge to be a member of the work team.
No, but we said now in the first line the proposal was to not make it and or, but make it and. Be an active participant and have expert knowledge of the PDP.
I'd hate to be in a position to have to prove expert knowledge.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, expert knowledge.
How about some familiarity?
Certainly,
you know,
that would be nice.
Experience in a previous working group, PDP working group, something like that, something more specific, but not as rigorous.
Yeah, I guess I have to say we need some level of flexibility due to, you know, turnover and people suddenly waking up and saying this is important, and we have to be a little bit flexible on it. I mean, I would not have wanted to be in a position 3 years ago to be forbidden from working on the new GTLD PDP because I wasn't involved in the first 3 years.
Yeah, but no one is forbidden to participate. I mean, no one is forbidden, of course, to participate. It's open for anyone to participate. I mean, this is talking about the travel funding.
Well,
so I think one thing that may help that, and this might already be in there, and if it is, I just forgot, is to basically say that the role of the face-to-face is not to rehash discussions that have already taken place, but really to discuss items that are still questions in the draft reports. That might go a long way.
Yep.
I mean, it really just sounds like there's one stakeholder group that is having discussions of who to send, and at this point, I think if what I've heard on this call is that, and again, this is an issue for staff because it's ultimately staff providing the funding, but I think the view I've heard is that as long as if Alex is designated by the non-commercials as the person and he's dedicated to finishing out the rest of the work.
Can I ask a question? Because I do have a question, because there are, you know, people like Avery, and I think Avery is still involved. I mean, she has participated in the survey and has been on a number of calls. My question is just, why would the NCC designate someone that only joined the work team after Seoul, and, you know, Alex, sorry if I'm wrong, but I don't think you have been involved in any PDPs or, you know, not in any I've been supporting. So my question is, why would they make the decision to fund someone that, you know, doesn't fulfill the criteria of active and, you know, expert knowledge, while there are other members that are members of the work team and have been participating that would qualify under the conditions that the group in principle says, apart from, you know, exceptional circumstances? So that's just a question.
Can I try to answer?
Yeah, sure, Alan, yeah.
Yeah. I think the answer is, to some extent, it's up to NCSG. I mean, I'll point out that Avery was participating as a NOMCOM appointee at the time, not representing NCSG. But, you know, assuming a body, you know, bodies carry on with their history, then I think if there is only one and it is up to NCSG, and if they decide that Avery is the best person, or Robin because she has responded to the surveys, which few other people have, or Alex, because that's where the commitment is going to come in the future, I think we have to allow them some level of discretion. We can make strong recommendations, but I mean, we've been fighting this thing in at large of, do we rate someone purely by the metrics of how many meetings they've attended, and that's not necessarily the best metric.
Yeah, and I'm just not sure that this is. We can encourage Avery and others to participate remotely. I'm just not sure if this is a political fight we necessarily want to go to the mat on.
I don't think we want to.
James, you have a. James.
Yeah. Real quickly, as far as. Well, the mute button. I have to drop off here as well, but I just wanted to say, let's make sure we're not confusing open to participation with who's funded. I think that that line's getting blurred a little bit in this discussion. So, but thank you, Jeff. I need to drop off.
Okay, thanks, James. So I think, Marika, what's probably hearing is that we'll have a conversation. I think you should have another conversation with Robin, but ultimately, if the non-commercials designate Alex and Alex is committed to working with us to the end, I'm not sure that it's really a staff decision at that point. I'm not sure that this work team is willing to – I haven't heard a willingness of this work team to go against that. I certainly, it seems like the work team does not agree with the notes that Robin sent about equal representation. I think that's kind of, I think we're all agreed that that's not really relevant to the face. Anyone disagree with that? Okay. Marika, does that help?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone. Marika, let me know if you want to talk offline. If you want to give me a call.
Can we talk later?
So we can get this. So let's. All right, Marika. I think we're done with the call. I'll call you. I'll email you so we can get this thing out to the PPSC.
Okay. Thank you, Joe.
All right. Thanks, everyone.